Yeah, welcome. Welcome back, everybody, to the Configure It Done podcast. We have had some fantastic guests recently on their new series around S4 and do's and don'ts. We had Kailash Attawal on the podcast talking about his approach to people and SIs. We had Adrian Fernando talking about an approach around Greenfield. We also had Luke Keddie recently talking about a brownfield approach and what they did at PowerLink there. But we were really keen to get Mark Ullman along today. Thank you for coming along, Mark, to talk about a different approach and if you started today. Now, before we go into that, can you give the audience, people that don't know of you, can you give a bit of background around yourself, your career, and obviously what you're doing today?
Welcome to the new and improved Configure It Done podcast. The Configure It Done podcast is now a place where we interview senior thought leaders in the SAP space across Australia and New Zealand, and the aim is to tap into their knowledge so we can pass on their insights to the listening SAP community.
This podcast is in partnership with the Black Dog Institute, who aim to create a mentally healthier world for everyone. If you wish to donate to the cause, please click the link below.
Thank you very much, Jay and Shay. It's an honor to be here.
You won't forget that in a hurry.
There you go. It's an honor to be here, and I'm delighted to be able to share a few views on the topic. So I'd like to share an architect's view today.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So I'm in the SAP ecosystem for a bit over 20 years. I spent 18 of those years with Accenture, and recently moved to EY. And I usually, when I'm talking about my experience, I say that I probably have a non-traditional background in SAP, because I actually entered SAP as a Java developer. Which is not necessarily what you might find. Not the, you know, the tech arc or ABAP developers that have been, you know, only looking at programming very much in context of a business process. But I come more from a software engineering background, and I've been working myself into the SAP ecosystem there. And I also learned ABAP, which felt a little bit like programming with broken fingers. It's, you know, learning those tool sets, but it gets extremely powerful once you understand. But you know, I'm in Australia now for about 8 years, and I've done lots of work with BTP and with extensions to SAP. Yeah, in the past, that was more, you know, building a Java application on top of your ECC and you know, put a some sort of an HTML front end on top. Yeah, and SAP has started industrializing that using BTP as a platform and moving from an old NetWeaver portal to something which can actually scale very much, right? So work zone today, or even any Angular or React front end that you can put on top, so achieve awesome user experience. And and I've been working a fair bit as well in solutioning in S4 upgrades, greenfield implementations, and brownfield implementations. And I'm keen to share a few insights.
Perfect. And firstly, congratulations on the new role with EY.
Thank you very much.
Can you tell the audience a bit about your role now and what you're doing?
Yeah, so I'm a director in the technology consulting space at EY, and I look from a go-to-market perspective, supporting the team to try to find and position the right solutions and defining the strategy to do that, and then owning the architecture capability in what EY calls the Oceania market, so Australia, New Zealand, Fiji. Yeah. And providing consistent responses in line with EY methodology and applying best practice.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that overview, Mark. So, Che, Mark and I, we met before this podcast, and we had a bit of a framework on what we want to touch on today. Just a bit of background on what Precision are doing. We're creating this content library where we're interviewing excellent people like Mark in the market around a theme called S4 do's and don'ts. And today we want to touch on the future. And obviously, if you started a project in the future or today, it's a topic that we want to discuss with yourself. Now, we've had previous guests on the podcast that started their journey. They were early adopters, and they may have started a couple of years ago. And obviously, technology evolves, people evolves, the market evolves. And what I want to tap into with yourself, Mark, is if you did start a project, an S4 project or the journey today or tomorrow, what would you have to consider?
There you go. So I'll take the point on, let's start the journey today. Yeah. Because if you start the project, that means you basically have already done your homework and you have chosen what you want to do and you start executing. But I want to focus on what is it that if you start the journey today, right? Okay. So there is studies out in the market that say, you know, there is still only 30% of customers that have adopted S/4HANA, right? And depending on where you look, that number just varies greatly. So there is a large number of customers out there. They're still on an ECC platform.
Yeah.
So that's something that's quite relevant when looking into that. Now, I think the way I shape this in my mind is you need to consider that SAP has been spending many years now to transition into a cloud company, right? And for a long time, there was a slogan, right? So it's, and, you know, the CEO says that and company says that, yeah, we are a cloud company, but then, you know, you're working with these old tools. That's not quite real.
Yeah.
But I think we're very much at the, let's say at the second half of that journey where lots of the components are actually in place. Yeah? And just look at how is SAP treating their core offering today? It's S/4HANA cloud. Mm-hmm. That's it. Yeah, and then you have your private flavor and you have your public flavor. Yeah. Yeah? And then they put the methodology around that, right? Rise with SAP or grow with SAP. But at the core, it's S/4HANA cloud. Yeah. So, that's something that one needs to be very clear about, because when we're looking into options that we have, is an on-premise deployment of S/4HANA today an option? Yeah. And on-premise is even running that on a hyperscaler. Yeah. So if you run it in the cloud. So for a long time, in the consulting industry, we actually, we were running a campaign that was the journey to cloud. Yeah? Mm. Take your existing SAP landscape, move that onto a hyperscaler. It gives you efficiencies, cost savings and all of that. Yeah? And then allows you more agility. Does that actually work? Well, only if you adopt the methodology as well. But, is that an option today? And it's, I think the answer there is it depends. Yeah. If you have the licenses available for S/4HANA, then yes. Yeah. You can choose that. But if you don't, that's not necessarily the case, right? Because you can buy S/4HANA cloud. Yeah. So I think first of all, my advice to customers is make sure you check in with SAP and understand what your options are. Yeah. And from there, it's really the question on how much do you want to invest in order to adopt that cloud architecture or not? Yeah. And the second part that I look at there is in the past you had the ability to actually take your current ECC system and just make an upgrade, right? And we've heard that on a previous podcast.
Yeah.
The only thing you really need to do is change your business partner, because there the data structure fundamentally evolves. Yeah. So you cannot run that. But other than that, you know, the SAP allows you to use compatibility packs and use the same functionality in S4 than what you had in ECC.
Because essentially that would be like upgrading, you've got the same system. So you're spending all this money, but you've got the same, yeah, the same system.
That's correct. So that's purely change in technology, and maybe, you know, change in how you run the system. You move it into the cloud can have some benefits, but from a user perspective, that doesn't, right? And I found that quite interesting. I met a friend recently, like Irish girl, yeah, recently moved to Australia, works as a controller in a global company. You know, she runs finance reports. Her previous company was running ECC.
Yeah.
Her current company now runs S4.
Okay.
And then I was trying to tell her about the benefits of, hey, you know, S4, you can do all these things. And he looks at me like, oh, it actually looks the same. And then, you know, that was very much the point where I thought, okay, you could do this differently.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the compatibility packs there, it's a concept that SAP has introduced way back when 2016, when they brought S4 to the market, and the main reason was S4 didn't have all features, right? So if you wanted to run your process, you needed to adopt these legacy functions in order to actually run your ERP process.
Yeah.
But the smart way that they've done it was they actually gave it a license or a usage right, which means that it can also have an expiry date, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're, I think the difference from planning your journey in the past to planning your journey now is that this usage right actually runs out end of 2025. So okay. You cannot just right. take your old functionality and move that further, but there is a necessity to evolve. And that's a part that you need to, as a customer, very clearly understand, because it's there is no as is there, but you need to really understand it to be.
Yeah. Okay. So if I'm a customer, I want to concentrate on the how. Like, how do you know how to change?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I think that's also a very interesting aspect, because there is many tools available that you can use. Yeah. So on, you know, just taking your system today, SAP gives you a readiness report. You run that and it points you to, all right, here is some compatibility packs that you need to look at, or simplification items that you need to adopt.
Is that Signavio, is it?
That's a readiness check, which yeah. is separate. But the other part, which I find highly interesting from an architecture point of view, is the way SAP has been broadening that capability over the last couple of years, right? So you mentioned Signavio. Signavio was actually acquired in 2021, which was announced together with the launch of RISE. Yeah, so that was beginning 2021. It was by that time we thought it's, you know, very much a marketing stunt. You don't see any impact really. Yeah, so it's just SAP needed some time in order to adopt. But if you look at it now, it actually is the foundation of what SAP now calls business transformation management. Mm. Yeah, and they have executed on that strategy quite consistently, with Signavio on the one hand allowing you to actually make your process diagnostics, yeah, and depending on whether you really want to go into process mining, yeah, like first of all start with, you can benchmark against SAP best practice, which is awesome capability, right? Out of the box you can press a button and you can see there is actually some functional areas where I can immediately evolve, and you can make a business case on top of that because it gives you numbers, yeah, which is something usually that a consultant needs to do for you, right? So make a benchmark of the process and tell you, hey, this is the potential you have to evolve. Right now, you like parts of that you can actually get by pressing a button, which I found it's a great capability to have. So something that customers are slowly adopting, but think lots of upside there. You can even go into full process mining if you want to go across the not only SAP, but also non-SAP ecosystem. Whereas the looking at LeanIX, for example, as another acquisition in that space, that's something which I actually found quite profound as a step.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because like as an architect working in the SAP system and SAP programs, you're faced with the situation quite often. You're asking, okay, so how many systems do we need to interface with? How many interfaces do we actually have? Right. So, or what version is the other side of the system? Right. So getting those inventories of, all right, so tell me, where do we sit? How does that evolve? And what do we need to consider? Like often you get Excel sheets and then they're not necessarily up to date. And you may, in the middle of the project, it's like, oh, hey, here's a new interface register.
Yeah.
It's like, that's actually something that's extremely difficult to absorb. Mm-hmm. And looking at something like LeanIX to do application portfolio management and actually industrializing your architecture function, that's like a whole different ballgame, right? I mean, is that something that is necessary for customers to adopt? I'd say, no, it's not, right? It's a tool that allows you to really boost that capability, but you can also do that differently. Yeah. But the mere fact that you have that available and SAP just continues to build out best practice content in there, I find it's such a great ability to for customers to leverage, something that's certainly worth looking into. And then we've got the latest acquisition, which is WalkMe, right? Which is then goes into execution and adoption. Once you have built your process, once you went through your transformation, just make sure that whatever we intended is actually the case. Mm-hmm. And it's very fresh still, and it's something that SAP still needs to weave in. But overall, I think I find that capability of business transformation management very compelling. And that's a great tool for customers to actually look into when you start out planning a journey.
Sure. So if you had to summarize on the support, if I'm a customer and I'm looking for, you know, what support is out there, if you had to summarize your top three or four kind of go-tos, what would that be?
Mm. I mean, first of all, obviously, choose the right partner.
Is that a plug for EY?
Oh, yeah. I think Signavio is a tool set that is definitely, that should be front of mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not only for modeling the processes. Like in the past, we had solution manager, a first attempt for SAP to go there. And now Signavio, but the analytics functions that it gives, they are really sophisticated and give access to lots of insights. So
yeah.
Process insights there is the product. That's something that I think everybody should be looking at. And we as consultants also leverage in order to shape a strategy. LeanIX is something that it will boost an enterprise architecture capability internally, but we've seen examples where it also works well without. Yeah, but it's I think if you're integrating that well into your process, it can really increase visibility and gives you control, which is something that, you know, in the past we didn't really have. WalkMe, obviously, for adoption. It's Enable Now has been the default for SAP programs for a while, and it's slowly going to shift. I mean, it's not mandatory. There's other ways to do that. But I think certainly something that as a package makes a lot of sense.
You mentioned, Mark, as well, around 30% of customers obviously have made that transition. So when, I guess, businesses are looking at alternatives, like, would you say, is there a do-nothing approach?
I'd say right now, there is no do-nothing really, but there is more the question on when do you start acting?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The point has been debated many times. I find it so funny, yeah? The SAP ecosystem, SAP customers, probably, I mean, Australia is, as a market, probably not as large as others. Yeah? If you look at the home market in Germany or overall in Europe or in North America, there you've got so many heavyweight customers that use SAP wall to wall. And like everybody thinks they have a mandate to dictate what SAP should do. Yeah. So when SAP announced cloud strategy, like big uproar. And also if you ask a German for the opinion, they will share if you want it or not. Right? It has taken a long time for customers to really get acquainted to that. And there was a lot of resistance there. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite sure that like the market has picked up on that. Yeah? If you look at ServiceNow, for example, Bill McDermott being the CEO of ServiceNow, you know, like coming out of SAP for a long time and running SAP there. So very intimately familiar with the strategy itself. ServiceNow has been positioning themselves as the workflow company and the UX, the user, like the experience layer that can be on top of your ERP, right? And there is options out there that allow you to actually operate your existing ECC system for an extended period of time. Yeah. Mm. Not only until 2030, but longer, right? So there is options in the market that allow for customers to move sideways.
Yeah.
My advice in that aspect would just be make sure you talk to other customers who have taken a similar approach, because it can have very significant consequences in the sense of how you will operate with SAP, the behavior there. We've seen massive lawsuits between SAP and the customer base around licensing, which can turn into very, very long and costly endeavors. Yeah? So, you know, in quotes, make sure that the house is clean and just make sure that there is that strategy in place, because after that, at some point, even when you take that approach to continue and build something on top, you will need to move out. Yeah, the ERP will at some point just not be suitable anymore for how an ERP process needs to run. Right. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you can sit still and just wait for the clock to run out. I mean, we have actually multiple clocks that are running in parallel. So if you don't have it now is the time to actually do a proper strategy. You know, either you buy into SAP or you don't. Just make a decision. Yeah? And if you buy into SAP, there's quite a few flavors available. It makes sense to plan which path to take.
Does the resistance march, do you think it's purely based on money?
If you think about it, customers have been pouring millions and millions of dollars in building out the ERP core capability, and in quotes, now we need to do it all again. That's not a good reason. Yeah. And for a long time, S4 was considered a technology upgrade, right? So if you, in the early days, if you talk to SAP about, hey, why should we go to S4HANA? Hey, look at our finance data model. Now we don't have 400 tables anymore. We just have 10. Yeah. I think they have changed the game really. They've been working on value messaging. They've been working on, what's actually value that can be uncovered in every different process. What are value drivers and things you can adopt? So there is so much material out there, and it now all comes, like before it was PowerPoints, right? It was material somewhere dispersed that was available. Now it comes together because with Signavio, you can actually analyze those levers. Yeah. Some even with the click of a button, or with LeanIX, you have that path available to plan all of that and how it links together. So I find that it was an extremely smart move for SAP to open that, and it becomes what is like that intellectual property now becomes available, and it can be leveraged by customers a lot more easily than in the past.
Yeah. Okay. I want to pivot the conversation, Mark, around clean core.
Yes.
It's something that we hear a lot at the minute. First of all, can you tell us about the history of clean core? And then discuss some insights around clean core.
Yes. And it's, I think, quite nicely links to just make sure you know the path to take. Yeah. And clean core is something you hear everywhere.
Yeah.
Like initially brought out by Björn Gerke in a tech ed conference in 2018. Yeah. Where there was like more that mantra, right? We need to keep the core clean, but it wasn't really understood what that actually means.
Yeah.
It's like I've been in client conversations where the perception was, okay, so you're offering clean core means there is no development that's happening in S4HANA anymore, but everything in BTP. Yeah, but that's not that doesn't work, right? I mean, BTP is an awesome platform, but it's there is a limit to what makes sense to do there. Yeah, I think in the past 6 years, SAP has also invested a lot into detailing that out. And there is great material out there. There is clean core guides. There is whole trainings, not only to partners, but also to clients available on what that means. And what I really like is SAP has started to separate that into the different aspects, right? So what does clean core mean for extensibility? What does it mean for integration? What does it mean for data, for your business process? As well as for your operations, man. I mean, obviously, like behind each of them, you can actually write a product. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you want to do this, go to product A or to product B. Yeah. But I find it really helpful as a guardrail to say, these are the considerations that you need to take into account across all of those dimensions. And then plan it out. Yeah. And each of the products have been maturing over time as well, that, the BTP platform, you can do a lot more things, including running ABAP in the cloud. And I think that's a big step change towards the message in the past versus where we have arrived now. Because if you look at the very heart of it, and I mean, obviously, I'm talking more about the S4HANA Cloud private edition than public edition, but at the heart of it, we still see ABAP as a language. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And for anything that's very close to those processes, you will still need to write ABAP. Yeah. But SAP has come up with a way, like it was previously called steampunk, or known under the term steampunk, and has also evolved in ABAP in the cloud, where there is clear guidelines on what can you do, what can you not do in order to keep it compatible, right? So you can still write ABAP. It can still live somewhere in your core or clearly defined next to it, but you have a clear guardrail on where the boundary is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As always with SAP, sometimes the boundary is very gray. So there are still points where there is no clean core option available. And like, if you look into the details of the documentation, like, and in case you can still do classical extension. Yeah. Why? We're still lacking a little bit of capability, but I think you're overall, you can cover 90% with what is there. And the rest is the exception. Yeah. And as long as we have a plan in place on how to deal with all of that, I think that's the key. So it's again, right? So what is the call out for clients is making sure you have somebody that understands that, that map of capabilities. And there is a framework on how to use it.
Yeah. Okay. There's one thing I want to touch on, Mark, is a lot of fear in the market with consultants at the minute. And you mentioned that about consultants. And if a customer does go to the cloud, do you think it's going to make their jobs extinct, basically?
It's an interesting question. So I don't think so. So there is still lots of ABAP that will need to be written when you're running an S/4HANA private edition, S/4HANA cloud private edition program. Mm. Yeah. I do, however, think that the considering the advancements of AI and some capabilities around the technology, it's going to get less and there is going to be a lot more that will be generated.
Okay.
And you still today need somebody that, you know, that if you generate it, you need to guard it. You need to make sure it's correct and you need to fit it. But it's, you know, as one developer, suddenly you can do the job of three. Yeah. Mm. So is it going to be extinct? Certainly not. But the face of that profession will change quite a bit. And it gives that little bit of that force that the people actually themselves need to evolve into architects, right? So you cannot be a developer anymore, right? Yeah. But you really need to elevate your game. It needs to be one thing you can do among many others.
That's great insight.
Yeah. And when we talk about S/4HANA Cloud, Mark, obviously in the market, it's a lot of talk around RISE and customers adopting that approach. So be keen to understand, like, what are your key considerations that customers will need to look into if they do decide to go down that route?
Yes, that's actually a great question. I think RISE among many terms in the SAP ecosystem at some point has received a very negative connotation.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, like everything that customers hear is RISE, but okay, I don't understand it. I don't really want it. Yeah. Mm. Give me what I had before. The SAP sales force is just, it's massive and can be very forceful. So, I understand there is lots of hesitation, but in the end, SAP has turned that into a methodology, right? So it's right now the product is S/4HANA Cloud Private Edition, and then RISE is the methodology that is used in order to get there. Yeah. Which includes activate and particular activities even to measure and plan for a clean core delivery, right? So having that in the, in your methodology from the start. But also, I think if looking at what we talked about before, like can you still do on-premise? I think that's one of the key things that have been rubbing clients, because, you know, if you're running on-premise / on a hyperscaler, if I need a new box, you know, if I need a new sandbox or a development system, I just spin it up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I go to my IT and say, hey, can I have it 2 days after, you know, we had Terraform automation, like everything goes very quick. You can have it with RISE. It ultimately is governed by a contractual framework, right? So you move into a subscription. What does that mean? You need to know upfront how many systems. You need to know upfront how many. By when you want to have it. You need to get the sizing right, and then suddenly somebody says, okay, sign here for the next 5 years. Yeah. So that has a core set basically that comes with it that you will get on and need to live with, which obviously is a bit of a loss of flexibility than what has been in the past. Mm. But the way you can counter that as a customer is just making sure that you know your journey, yeah, and making sure you have your sizing right. You do your, in quotes, your homework and make estimations on how it can change. Yeah. Work with SAP and with your partner in order to define the strategy on, okay, you know, by when can we ramp? Yeah, those ramps are also flexible. But you know, you need to invest some time to look at the plan as well. By when you wanna move from your development into your zip testing or UAT testing, when do you think you actually might need a parallel system stream? Like all of these things, you can up to a certain extent plan out before, and that makes up for quite a bit of the flexibility that we had. Obviously, it never fixes the whole thing, right? So there, you need to do the homework, and at some point there is a rigidity. But yeah, with the right tools and approach in place, you can mitigate some of that. And I think a second call that I quickly want to make there is the licensing model works slightly different. And a few core concepts that I think a customer needs to understand very well, which is the user number, right, has been translated to a floating user number called FUEs. Yeah, that you need to know how to deal with that and how to calculate that properly. And I think the second one is using digital access. Right? It's a license component. SAP has introduced that a couple of years back, I think, to reflect the situation that customers have been using their ERP as a backbone and then had put a different application on top of that. And then, you know, you had one connection to the system and, you know, one user that you paid for. But then you have thousands of users actually using the external application, which obviously is still leveraging the capabilities of your core, but then in quotes, you know, not necessarily paying for that. Yeah, with a licensing model around digital access, it basically treats the system in that way and licenses to say, we are looking at the amount of documents that are created. Yeah, like updates, reading doesn't make any difference, right? But what is created? Yeah, your material documents, your purchase orders, your invoice documents, or finance documents. And this is something you need to have a good understanding of in the way you're planning to use that system. How much data is going to come there from external? Because that can be quite a significant license component in that game. Sure. So, if you spend some time understanding that, I think RISE overall isn't that scary.
Now, Mark, obviously we met before. I've got some notes here around brownfield and greenfield. We've spoken to a number of different customers and that are thinking about S4 and a number of different approaches. And yeah, we keep hearing greenfield, we keep hearing brownfield, even bluefield as well. But can you share your do's and don'ts to each of those?
Yep. I think if you look at overall the number framework is you've got, a large portion brownfield customers that were decided to do brownfield, a large portion greenfield, almost to the same extent. And then you've got that little bit of bluefield in the middle. And what does that mean? Yeah. If you're looking at a greenfield conversion, I don't think that it's actually something that is, necessarily something to shy away from. And my personal expectation is that, if we look over the next 2 or 3 years, 25 through 27, we're going to see a lot of that.
Yeah. Okay.
There is lots of the installed base. In the end, you need to somehow move to S4 for whatever reason. I mean, we talked about, the different considerations that are meaningful to do, but sometimes it's just the, all right, so we need to move that platform off for whatever reason. And that's going to be done. Hopefully with a little bit of renovation on top. Yeah, and I'll talk about that in a second. But I think it's very meaningful, or something that can, that leans to, or that customers can lean to when it's a more, I wouldn't say simple landscape, but probably not as scattered, right? So you're running one ERP and then in the future, you also want to have one, all your businesses are there, like nothing is massively broken. You want to keep your data and it's not that, you have to run massive cleanup exercises, right? So then you can take that, maybe put a cutoff somewhere that you want to archive some of the data, just making sure your database size gets contained a little bit. But overall, it's more that, it's more renovating your house rather than a knockdown rebuild.
Okay.
You know? Yeah. Versus if you look at greenfield, it's like, you know, companies that have been doing acquisitions left and right, and you have multiple ERPs and running on different versions and, you know, having overlap in the process, but then so many differences. And like there is actually a need to really consolidate what's out there. Yeah. And it's meaningful to do a harmonization of process and try to get back into one common platform again. Yeah. Or where there's just a big benefit of trying to cut and do some new ones. Yeah. Mm. And I've been part of both. I mean, the one thing is, which I find interesting, is that even when you're running a greenfield for a customer that already has an SAP footprint, it's never really green. Yeah. Because there is so many dependencies around that, where you have interfaces to old, like to legacy systems, and part of a procurement process that runs elsewhere, or your supply chain that runs elsewhere, right? Are you going to be changing those systems as well? Like, if the answer is no, then you have a dependency, right? You still need to feed them with the same data, and somehow you need to produce that data, and you might have actually custom built some of that, right? So that directly translates to, okay, you need to keep that stuff. You cannot break it, and there is limited opportunity to renovate. Yeah. But overall, let's say the majority would still be trying to move to a best practice process and then apply the clean core principles to that. But it's always that journey where you need to make decisions on, are you going to keep that or not? Mm-hmm. And then overall, you know, you need to have that plan in place on what does clean core mean for you. And in a brownfield, it's a lot more a gradual journey where you can slowly, you know, peel the onion and slowly move stuff out. In a greenfield, obviously, you have the opportunity to rip it a lot better. Mm. But it's, you know, in any case, you need to have your tools in place and your methods in place in order to guide it. Yeah. And I think one of the core things, which we touched upon it before with the example I gave, is I think there is certain things you need to do in any case, and user experience to me is one of that. Yeah. If you look at how SAP evolved over time, right now, like, bad user experience was always something that the market was like attaching to SAP. Mm. And if you ever have used a SAP GUI as a first user, it's like, it's really difficult. Yeah. It's like, it looks like nothing else, and you need to get used to that. But it's what I find is that, when you have users that use it for, you know, 10, 20 years, yeah, they get so quick. It's like mainframe applications. They can use this interface blindly, and people get super quick with that. Yeah. So taking that away is actually sometimes, a big impact, right? Mm. So this is where change management comes into play. You need to make sure there is transition. But then on the other hand, SAP is just putting so much effort in evolving the user experience over time, mm-hmm. and has moved to Fiori as a design language, that it's like, for anybody that is looking at a transformation, like, my big recommendation is just make sure you see it. Yeah. Because I think the biggest handicap that you can have when looking at a brownfield transformation is just take whatever's there and then, you know, do your mandatory renovations, but then keep it as it is. That means you still use SAP GUI as your entry point. Mm-hmm. And that, like, so many innovations, or most innovations actually, are in the Fiori user interface. And the capabilities today to, as like a landing page for I'll take the procurement officer again as an example. Right? So you have your landing page, and it's not just the names of the applications you can call, you know, create a purchase order or create a purchase requisition or whatnot. You get a whole dashboard. You can mix KPIs, key KPIs. Yeah. How much is still available in a certain contract, right? Moving into spend analytics, or how many POs have you been creating over whatever, or like, you know, dashboards of open POs that require approval, or like, you can really engineer that to the job. And making that a lot more appealing and a lot more productive. Yeah. But you can only do that when you start adopting some of the newer technology, right? And even with brownfield, you have those options, right? It's just, it's a bit more gradual, but that's something where I think it's a big benefit. And in an S4 program, if you don't have UX as one of the streams, I think that's a mistake.
What would you say to those business users that, you know, don't like change? And you know, obviously it's great if you're going to change, but some people just they're afraid of it, they don't want it. But what would your message be?
Oh yeah, that's a really difficult one. I think it's don't be afraid.
Yeah,
because it's the world is changing. There's nothing you can do about that. Yeah, and I think it will be effort that people need to invest in order to adopt something else. And I mean, I just went through that. Yeah, I spent 18 years with Accenture. I knew all the tools. I know the process. I know the network. And it's like you can do your job easier. I mean, I made the decision for myself to make a transition, and I forced myself to learn. But that gives a great opportunity to change perspective, as well as to personally and professionally evolve. And that, like, for the person that is executing one transaction for all their life, that might not be the desire. Yeah, but up to a certain extent, I find that in our modern society today, if you don't move, at some point you will become obsolete.
And I think this takes us quite nicely onto the next topic, but you said the world changing. Looking into the world of AI and BTP, obviously Jay and I, you know, meet a lot of different clients and the market. There's a lot of buzzword around AI. What does the future look like? How does the SAP approach that? Obviously BTP, we touched on as well. Can you share some insights around AI and BTP?
Yeah, I think it wouldn't be complete not talking about those topics, I guess. I think let's separate BTP and AI for a second. I think overall BTP as a platform has been maturing so much. I mean, I think one of the things that is always, if you're in the SAP ecosystem, is always terrible for customers as well as for consultants. SAP tends to use the same name for so many different things, which makes it extremely difficult to navigate, right? So if we talk about BTP, like, what is it exactly, right? Is it application development? Is it integration? Is it automation? Is it data? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so many different flavors, which obviously is something that you need to, as a company, understand and just make sure that you really you know what is where and you know what capabilities are actually useful for you. Yeah. But I find it has been maturing significantly and is something that's really to be considered by customers. And I think you also see that in requests that come in for the skill set. My call out there is just don't call it BTP, but just make sure you know a bit more differentiated. What is it that you're actually after? And the other part is AI. Yeah, it's like if you look at it in the context of what SAP, the way SAP understands it is business AI, which is it's a great concept. Yeah, and it very much leans to SAP owns business data. Yeah, so that's the reason why you put it on top. You can achieve business AI as such. Yeah, but that's the, you know, in your process, you know, HR, success factors, write in your job description. Now you have that inbuilt button that will generate that for you, like awesome capability. Yeah? Or, other areas where it's woven into the process in the background. What does that mean for us as consultants? Like, okay, I need to be able to tell you about it, right? It makes SAP as a platform more valuable. But then, you know, on the other hand, it's a lot more like, how do we deal with AI in the sense of operation, like, or even in the sense of running a project? Yeah. And this is where I mentioned before, from a, like, what will a developer do in the future? Yeah. With SAP build as a tool set, as like, you know, we're getting more and more features in there, you know, generate your stub for your Vuori application or describe how you want the function to work and it spits it out. It's like, it's the productivity of people using those tools will increase. Also, if as a company you choose your delivery partner, they need to have a strategy in place and have a credible story on how will they actually leverage AI in their project delivery, because there are so many things to be done there, from you know, generating your business process hierarchy, to creating your functional designs, to creating your technical designs, to reverse engineering code and actually spit out all the user stories and all of these things. And it's like, it will significantly alter the way we all work together. But it's also such a fast moving space that it's extremely difficult to keep track on what's on top and, you know, what's left and right and what is it that you really need to do. Mm. And I think that really comes down to what I initially said, right? It's like, whatever you do, yeah, you need to start thinking about putting a strategy in place for adopting these technologies, because I personally think there is in that sense what we mentioned, yeah, there is no do nothing, yeah. And there is a need to try to harvest some of the capabilities which are coming. You need to be very specific on what is it that's relevant for you and what are the things that, you know, where you want to evolve and grow. Yeah. And it's so many great tool sets out there that we can leverage in order to guide that journey. And I'm excited, you know, I'm excited to be alive. Yeah? I'm a technologist at heart, and there is so many nice and shiny toys to play with. So it makes me personally very happy. And yeah, it's going to be exciting journeys that we can shape for our customers here, I guess.
Well, that's a brilliant summary there, Mark. And yeah, I really want to thank you for coming on the podcast today and tapping into your knowledge. I'm sure the listeners have gained a lot. If you had to leave one message for the audience today to summarize again how you would start, what would that message be?
Oh yeah, be curious. I think that's the main part. And I get the question, and like as a consultancy, we're asked to put roadmaps together, and on premise is still there, and we get asked for put it there as like seriously think about is that a future proof concept?
Okay.
Is that something that you can actually do with SAP as a vendor in your particular situation? And if not, you know, ultimately it's the decision on is SAP the right platform or not, right? Whatever way you choose, like now is the time to choose. Right?
Excellent. Mark, thank you very much for coming on. Really
thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Was fun. Mark. Thank you very much.
Brilliant.
There we go.
All right.
That was class.
Please like, share, comment, and subscribe to the Configure It Done podcast.